back to A New Sound with me, Morgan Brown. I hope everyone is doing well. Happy to be back. Took a little time off. But, wow, what a show to come back to. Guys, I don't often, you know, get embarrassed about meeting people or celebrities or anything, but, man, this one was kind of tough because I've loved this artist since around 2013. This artist introduced me to an entire new genre of music that I fell in love with. I'm talking, of course, about the guest on the show today, Jess Abbott of the band Tankred. When I first saw Tankred, I didn't really know you could be in a band and make that your living, or any kind of career in the arts for that matter, and I started going to shows. This was one of the first shows that I went to. I saw Tankred at Great Scott in Boston, if you know that venue. RIP, unfortunately, because of COVID. But regardless, Jess has done work with Now. She is with Tankred. I truly respect Jess as a musician. I love her work, and I don't want to keep you. I want you guys to check out this interview. This is of me and Jess. I hope you're doing well. I hope everyone is okay. Stay safe, stay positive, stay healthy, and check out my interview with Jess Abbott of the band Tankred. Thank you so much again for hanging out. I really appreciate it, and have a great day. So I'm with the Jess Abbott of so many musical projects. How are you doing, Jess?
I'm doing excellent. Yeah, I've been kind of like a little bit inactive during the pandemic. It hasn't been as much of a creative fountain as I'd hoped.
Well, I think that happens so often. I was talking to a lot of other people about this, and I think as artists and as musicians and as people, we're always like, oh, if only I had the time to like take off of everything and not have anything going on. But then you get there and you're like, oh, I guess I'm watching TV all day. And it's very hard to fit it in. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
I feel like I was putting pressure on myself to like take advantage of it. But then also, you know, it wasn't like a fun year off for anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
no,
it has
not
had its silver linings. But, you know, it was like you'd get alone with yourself and just like think and be like, oh, God. I'm so scared.
No, absolutely. I mean, how were you through COVID and like the pandemic? Has everyone been healthy and happy, or have like anything crazy happened for you specifically? Or I just want to make sure that you're okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely healthy. And I mean, we stayed, my partner and I were in LA when it started, and it was really easy for us to stay inside. We were really lucky in that way. And yeah, I don't think that we were ever really, we didn't put ourselves in a position where we were risking getting exposed to it. So it's been like healthy for us. I mean, but it was also scary. I mean, we had friends our age that, or like friends of friends that were our age, mm-hmm, that died from it. Like young people
so
that
terrible.
Were like 29.
So
like, yeah, it was messed up. But we ended up moving to Maine halfway through the pandemic, which was awesome. It was like our mental health got so much better being out of like a city. It was like, I think the month after we left, it came out in the news that like 1 in 3 people in LA County where we lived had COVID or had it. We were like, oh my God, we got out in time.
And you went to Maine?
Yeah, I'm from
That's
here.
Sick.
So yeah.
Oh, you're, so like, you're originally from Maine originally?
Yeah, kind of. I'm like split from Sacramento and Maine. I like grew up half in each place. But Maine is, I live in the same town as like my parents now, which
awesome.
Is nice. So yeah.
Must be very helpful to like at least be nice to have family and as well your partner like all in a nice little bubble. Must
yeah.
Is probably really nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I just want to give a little background for like the audience and everything else, I seriously have been such a fan of yours since around 2014. Like, I was just this teenager who was, I grew up in Massachusetts, so I grew up on the South Shore.
And oh, cool.
I was just like this teenager who was like working at Newbury Comics, just like loving music and loving records and stuff. And then I don't even know how I found your music. It was like down several like YouTube wormholes, and I found your first record. And then I think I saw you at like Great Scott like years ago, like, and it's just watching your whole career, like truly like blossom has been so sick. And I want to know exactly, like, before we get into like a lot of deep questions on like the records, about a lot of the music that you're working on now, I mean, obviously I want to discuss like, how did you even like get into music? What was your background like? And what did you like, what was your aspiration to then be this musician? Cause I know, cause you did a lot of work with Now, like you're all over the place. So how did it initially start?
Like, so I started, my mom had like an acoustic guitar kicking around when I was growing up. And when I was 8, she started to let me like play it. Cause you know, kids like do all kinds of weird
for sure.
stuff. So, she like would just like let me sit by myself and play it from when I was like 7 or 8. And I just was in love with it. I was having so much fun and was fascinated by like how the guitar worked. So she was like, okay, I'll put you in guitar lessons. So I took guitar lessons from when I was like 8 until 13 roughly. And that was like, I mean, the guitar has always been kind of my entry into everything for music. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, you know, my weapon of choice, I guess. And, I had a guitar teacher for the last kind of few years of my lessons that was really influential for me. He exposed me to Letters to Cleo and Portishead, all of the things that are
Letters
like
to Cleo is a slept on band.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Slept on band. Because I just saw the movie Jawbreaker and they did like 4 songs on that soundtrack and it's so sick.
Yeah. And they did songs for The Craft. They were like literally in 10 like Things I Hate About You. Yeah,
every late 90s like movie just had Letters to Cleo on their soundtrack and it's so sick.
Yeah. It's true. I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's true. Why isn't Letters to Cleo kind of like still like with all of the things it had, you know, you'd... but yeah, absolutely love Letters to Cleo and Portishead. Portishead is like what I come back to them, you know, like every day of my life. They're like my absolute number one favorite thing. I guess it was because of Letters to Cleo. Then like a year or so after I got this backwards here. My mom got me Josie and the Pussycats on VHS for Christmas one year.
Sick movie. Again. Yeah. Very, very slept on, underrated movie.
Yeah, definitely. And so I watched that and brought in the soundtrack to my guitar teacher to have him teach me all of the songs from it. And he was like, oh, the singer in this is Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo. And he's like, that's one of my favorite bands. So that was how I got into Letters to Cleo.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and I just remember lying in bed when I was like, I must have been maybe 12 at this time, and like hitting play on my like little portable CD player, and I hit play on Demon Rock from their album Wholesale Meats and Fish, and I remember just staring at the ceiling and feeling like my whole life was changing. It was like something like awakened in me of like some clarity of something that I really wanted to spend my time on earth doing, which was like making rock music.
Man, you want to talk about a calling, then that's a perfect moment to like really be like, yes, this is it. This is the moment. This is what I'm going to do. And it's going to be sick.
Yeah, I felt like my body was like my spirit was like lifting out of my body above me. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And so then I just started kind of recording. I started writing original songs around that time and recording them as much as possible. On like my school was part of this like MacBook program where we all would get assigned a MacBook for the year. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty great. It was supposed to be for homework, but I definitely was on GarageBand more than anything else on that and would just record all of my little songs. And then MySpace happened when I was in high school. So that was like, I started, and YouTube videos of like playing original songs. MySpace and YouTube were like, I was on those kind of posting videos and recordings of me playing. I had planned to go to college. You know, I didn't have any like big plan for playing music. I just knew I wanted to do it. So I did it all the time. And then a couple months before I was supposed to go to college, you know, I started being friends with Now, who I had met on MySpace. And
you met them on MySpace?
Yeah, I went.
That is
I ordered,
sick.
Yeah, they would sell their EPs on MySpace. You'd have to like message them and give them your address and like PayPal them. I don't even know if it was PayPal. You might have had to like mail a check or something.
Oh my god.
And so I
it
messaged them.
It seems so far away. It seems so long ago to even have that statement.
I know it's crazy to think about. So I had hit them up to get my girlfriend in high school was really into Nounou. I think she found them through like a Tegan and Sarah message board or something.
Oh my God. Again, these sentences are so perfectly like those years, and that's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, so she was like, I really want these Nounou EPs. 'Cause like there was no Spotify at that time. Mm-hmm. It was just like MySpace music players, and that was the only place you could get Nounou's EPs. So I was like, oh, I'll order them for you for her birthday or whatever. And then I ended up talking to Casey, and we became really good friends. And I guess the rest is history. I was like, I'm about to go to college. And they were like, do you want to move to Minneapolis and join our band instead? And I was like, yes, absolutely.
That is, how did you convince your parents of that? Or were they like super like pushing for that? Or were they wanting you to go down the college route?
I made the decision without my parents knowing that I was going to do that. I think I've always been, I was always the kind of teen that was like, I wanted to be as independent as possible. Mm-hmm. So the moment I turned 18, I was like, well, those are the rules. You can't tell me what to do anymore. And so I made the decision. My mom was really upset about it, because she just, you know, people going to college wasn't a thing for my family. So mm-hmm. I think it felt like I was like falling into some horrible family pattern by not doing it or something. But then when it started to work out, you know, she became really supportive and was just like, I'm sure she's glad now that I'm not sitting on like 100K of college loans.
No, I can imagine. And now you're in the same neighborhood. So I think it all is totally fine.
Mm-hmm. It worked out.
So you moved to Minnesota, and now you're working with Nounou, which is already a decently known band. Mm-hmm. What was that for you, like, jumping into that from just, like, your little singer-songwriter stuff to, like, oh, I'm in a real band. Like, there's touring. There's so much other aspects of, like, the music industry. What was that like for you just jumping kind of into that?
Well, it was really interesting because suddenly I was learning all of these words that I didn't really understand, you know, like tour manager and like booking agent, like things that you hear in mm-hmm. like media and like, you know, TV shows and movies don't usually accurately portray what those people do.
For sure.
It was, and I was only 18. So in that way, I think like I was very aware that I didn't know much. So everything I learned was fascinating to me, and I was able to kind of slip into the role I needed to be filling pretty quickly. I feel like my brain was still developing at 18. Mm-hmm. But Nounou, they definitely had a lot more going on than I did as a high schooler playing music just before that. But they still, you know, we hadn't put out Threads yet. It was just kind of like Nounou was very buzzy, but they hadn't done that many tours. I think they'd just done some like short runs here and there. It wasn't until probably a year after I joined that things started to like really build and things started like
coming
together. Okay,
cool. So you were kind of in there from the ground up a little bit, like not exactly, but you kind of jumped in right before is that their first full length, right? Was Threads?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And that was a really crazy time for us because right after I joined Nounou, we had to fire our manager who had been doing a bunch of sketchy things we didn't like. He also ran our label and was our tour manager. So we lost like this person that was like central to our plans. And there was about like 6 months to a year where we were just like floating. We were like, we don't know how to make like what to do and how to make this happen. And then we were approached by somebody, who managed us for a really long time, for like 8 years, had found one of my videos from YouTube from when I was in high school playing a song. I think it was called Bones or Bear. It was like a really one of the old school Tankard. I ended up making it a Tankard song, but I wrote that song when I was like 17 and put it on YouTube. And he found that video through a friend and then messaged me to be like, oh, do you have any management? And I was like, no, I'm spending all of my time in this band Nounou right now. And so he looked up Nounou and was like, does Nounou need management? And we were like, actually, yeah. So we met up with him and had a good vibe. And it was really our relationship with him that carried us into the next phase of everything. He got us set up with No Sleep Records, where he had been working at the time. No Sleep re-released our Neighbors EP for us. Mm-hmm. And he gave us, you know, he loaned us a record budget to record Threads with, and then which then got bought out by Trans Records, where the record came out. So yeah, and then it all just kept going from there.
So it all
I think.
Kind of Now, in the evolution of Now, when did you start the actual Tankred stuff? Was this, were you feeling that you just were like kind of playing guitar Now and you wanted to do your own like little thing? And then obviously Tankred then grew a lot too. So what was like the evolution of that for you?
So Tankred, I think, you know, like being in a band in Now with three of us, I mean, the writing experience for us was always really great. I think that we all brought something very different. Like I was bringing a lot of guitar and, you know, Casey was bringing a lot of lyrical ideas and melodic ideas. And Brad was able to bring all of these textures that you hear in all the Now records and the drums and everything. So we had like very different things we brought. And I think we all really appreciated that. And we had so much fun writing songs together. But on the side of that, you know, there was something that you have to kind of give up a little bit. You have to be writing music that the other people want to be playing as well. So there were some song ideas I had that didn't fit for Now, and I wanted to make them songs, and I knew they weren't going to fit in Now, but I was like, well, I don't want to have them do nothing. So I started writing songs in probably the end of 2010. Not really any plans to do anything with them. It was just for fun. It was just like, I wanted to be able to write songs completely on my own as just like, you know, a passion project. And our manager, Nana's manager, was like, oh, well, we can just put this record out on No Sleep as well if you want. You don't have to tour. You don't have to do anything with it. It'll just be there while you're busy with Now. So that was how I put Capes out.
And that seems
out.
Like a great situation. That seems like the best situation that you can get yourself in if you just want to put out some songs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was just digital at first, too. I don't think it even was, it definitely wasn't on vinyl until years later. I don't think CDs were happening. I think it was just like, here's a digital release for Tankred Capes. It's funny because my manager and I were in the process of planning some kind of Capes reunion thing because this is the 10-year anniversary of it coming out this year. And so last night we were looking up, we were trying to remember the exact release date for it. And we went down, you know, the rabbit hole of like all of the press coverage from when the first single came out announcing the record and blah, blah, blah. And the first single, first of all, got released on SoundCloud, which is really funny to think about now.
So funny. So funny to think about.
And it had like 20,000 plays on it, which is nuts because you have to like hustle to get that to happen now on like, you know, Spotify or whatever when you're tracking, you know, like the stats or whatever. Back then, like you could just get a bunch of streams like that from people reading music press and stuff. It wasn't this kind of.
I mean, the evolution of like streaming industry in general has completely changed, which is like sometimes really good and sometimes for the like the worse. It really depends on marketing. And I think it's just the evolution from like music in the or like before 2017 in general is this super weird. I was comparing it to like the late 90s with vinyl, where it's like if you find one of those records on vinyl, it's huge because no one was listening to it then. It's like this weird little void, like weird pocket of music history that is just so crazy, especially with the MySpace stuff. Like there's so many MySpace bands and things.
That reminds me too of, I haven't read this book, but somebody was telling me recently about a book about Radiohead that came out recently, I think. I'm going to really butcher this here. I don't know much about Radiohead. But I guess they were like, somebody that worked for them or at their label was able to intuit that they were like, when I'm going to forget if it was Kid A or OK Computer. Those are both Radiohead records.
Right? Those are both Radiohead records. Yes.
So
in Rainbows, all that stuff.
Whichever one came out closer to like, I think it was like the year 2000 or something.
Okay.
Somebody on their team was able to intuit that the internet was about to like radically change how music worked. And so I think they did something where they just like put the album up online for free when it came out. And then I think it got like pirated to shit or something. I'm really ruining this story.
But that whole like era of music in general, like right when the internet was getting huge, is true. Like you have all of like, those MySpace Warped Tour bands and all like this. It's such a weird little era.
Yeah.
But it was the Wild West. Yeah. It was really that is exactly the way to say it. It was the Wild West of like MySpace and streaming and like just that concept. And the fact that your first record came out on SoundCloud in general is like wild. Because
it was like the single. It was like
the single.
The single premiere or something was like hosted on SoundCloud. Yeah.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, super weird. But then, so it was just for fun at that time. Or did you want me to keep going?
No, go, absolutely. anything that you want to talk about, I am already in. So sick.
Well, so then like Capes came out and, you know, nothing like crazy happened with it. You know, I got a lot of support for it, but I didn't have anything physical to sell. Now by that point was getting ready. We were like heading to the studio, to record Threads, and, I was just very busy with that world. And then Threads came out and I was busy for a whole other year. I didn't really return to Tancred until 2013. So there was like a 3-year period between releases where I was, I think I had some time off during the summer after like a really busy touring schedule with Now. I have never toured that much in my life. It was crazy. It was like 10 months a year. I feel like we were just going. And so I had a couple months to just sit at home in my apartment and play guitar by myself in my room. And I ended up feeling the same way. I was like, I want to make some of these songs happen just for fun. And I was like, I kind of want to do a little more with it. I'm still not available to tour, but I want to like press it to vinyl and like do a press cycle, maybe do some one-off shows when I am free or whatever. You know, I want to like do a little more with it. And the same manager was like, okay, why don't we go to Top Shelf? I have friends at Top Shelf, and they would probably be really into it. And they were. Kevin and Seth at Top Shelf are such sweethearts, and they made that whole process so easy. I recorded that record in Minneapolis, a little bit, you know, higher quality than Capes. And I did it in like a legitimate studio, with a really great producer, Brett Bouillon, based in Minneapolis. He did like, Bad Bad Hats and stuff. And
mm-hmm. Wow, I mean, awesome.
One of like a sea of cool bands he's done. I'm for not sure. Even going to sit here and try to remember all of them, but it's a lot. Great producer. And, we recorded that self-titled record that came out on Top Shelf in 2013 in I think 5 days. And Brad from Now recorded all of the drums and all of the bass on it. And he designed the art. He designed the merch. You know, Brad
oh, cool.
can do everything. He's an extraordinary human. I did a handful of shows, which is, I think, maybe what you were referring to at, or you said Great Scott. I remember I played in the end of 2013.
I think I saw you right when, I think, did you do that on the Out of the Garden tour? It was like,
okay. This is like a couple years before that.
Yes. And then it was a couple years before that because I was so stoked to have been, because I heard the self-titled record and it was just like so relatable, and it opened up the completely, like it was, I made a joke to my friend the other day because we were talking about like the new Beach Bunny record. And I was like, Jess Abbott walked so Beach Bunny could run. And I will stay on that hill until I die. Just because it was like when I first heard that record, it was literally so perfect because it was like this one band that I was like, oh my God, I think I'm the only one in my high school who like knows this artist. Right. It was like such a cool moment because I was working at Newbury Comics and I was working at this record store, and it was like everyone would always tell me what to listen to. They're like, oh man, you got to check out this record. And I was so young and I was like, guys, I found this record that you guys definitely don't know about. You should totally check this record out. They're like, this wow. is sick. So it was a really cool moment for me in that era of like when the first record came out. And I'm still listen to it like to this day. But
thanks.
Of course. Like, come on. This is the like coolest thing ever. So, but now you're recording and you're like in a real studio and like with real producers and everything. How did that jump off to make more Tancred stuff? Was that just like a flame that ignited? So you're doing all these one-off shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the reason you're like, oh my God, I love this. I want to keep doing more. Or were you like more hesitant towards it?
Well, I think after the self-titled record came out, Now still had a few more tours to mm-hmm. kind of wind down our cycle. We had like a tour at the end of 2013, and then we had like a couple small things going on in early 2014. And then Now went on this massive hiatus where, you know, we didn't know what kind of music we were going to be writing.
How long was the hiatus?
Because
I'm trying to think, because I remember I watched the Now audio tree and that came out a couple years ago. Was that after the hiatus or?
I think we both released a single independently in like 2016 or 2017. Mm-hmm. So there was a long period of Now just
okay,
kind of getting
it.
Things together.
For sure.
And, you know, I think we kind of just realized that musically we wanted to go in different directions. You know, I'm very aware of the fact, you know, it's like very memed right now to talk about how guitar is like a thing of the past. And I know that there's exceptions to that. Like you can find guitar all over
for sure.
pop songs these days, of course. But there was something, you know, like I said before, guitar is my weapon of choice. And mm-hmm. I didn't like the idea of kind of trying to force the way I play guitar into this kind of more like pop dance. Direction.
Yeah, it was like definitely alt pop. And I think it was one of the first bands that I kind of got into the alt pop scene too, because again, I think Now was really influential and still is to like all those like new age, like again, like when you said the Wild West of music, when people were starting using synthesizers and everything on stage in like the early to like mid 2000s, like that era was so big. And I think they were definitely one of the roots in that, in my opinion, at least.
For sure. Yeah. When I joined Now, the idea of using like synthesizers and keyboards and stuff in a rock band was very new to me. Like
Super.
That was very like Brad's department at that time. Now it seems like it's the standard, and mm-hmm. I feel like Now was kind of doing it before it became the standard. I mean, I love Threads, and it's exactly how I would have wanted Threads to come out. I think all three of us really, I would guess, love that record. And in my mind, we were going to create a follow-up to Threads. And I think that wasn't the direction that Casey and Brad wanted to go in. And I, meanwhile, had just was finally introduced to That Dog for the first time in my life when I was like 21. And I was like, this is what I want to do.
That Dog's
like,
sick.
I heard That Dog. It hit me. It felt like
that song,
when I was
Long
a kid,
Island. Unreal.
Oh, yeah.
Unreal.
That whole
Unreal.
Record.
That whole record's sick. I love that record, man.
Yeah, incredible band. And it gave me that same feeling as when I was a kid listening to Letters to Cleo. And I was like, I need to follow this. Mm-hmm. And I think it just felt natural for Now and I to kind of do our own musical thing. And they were still so far out from even knowing what they were going to do. But I felt like I had all this fire in me to keep writing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I want to put out a record. And I sat at home. I wrote Out of the Garden in my apartment. I didn't really have much going on at that time in my life because Now was, you know, not doing anything. So I was just like at home, either at home, like watching Netflix, or at work. I was working at a liquor store at that time. And like I would walk.
Very glamorous rock star stuff. That everyone visualizes.
Yeah, there was a liquor store that was like on the corner of the block my apartment was on. So I would just like get out of bed and go walk down to the liquor store, like do my shift, had a blast working there, and like would walk home after and write songs. And that was my life for about a year. And the Out of the Garden songs just kind of like came out of me. It wasn't anything.
Was it
I
a
was
completely
like,
different writing process than the first record? Or did you like want it to be, when you were working on the writing for Out of the Garden, did it just come more natural? Did you feel like it wasn't forced at all? Or what was the actual process like for that?
It was definitely...
Because the songs seem super evolved. The songs seem like, oh my gosh, this is like... Like all of your records have like just gotten so much like better and like grown so much more as it goes. So what was like this new process like?
It's hard to even describe because mm-hmm. it truly just kind of like overtook me. There's something about that era of music, that genre of music, that like I clicked with on like a spiritual level, this kind of like 90s like, you know, pop grunge or whatever, like hooky kind of like clean mm-hmm. grunge stuff was just like it. I hadn't even heard of That Dog till I was 21, so it wasn't like I grew up in it. It was just kind of like hearkening back to something about that world of music, that genre, and where it came from in the mid and late 90s was like, it felt so close to like where and when I grew up, I guess, but not directly from the music. Like mm-hmm. I grew up in California in Sacramento in the 90s. And I feel like I had the most like typical 90s experience as a little kid. It was just like,
every meme about being a 90s kid is like what you relate to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so when this music came to me much later, you know, in the like mid 2010s, it was like, oh, this feels like when I was growing up, even though I didn't listen to any of this when I was growing up. And like, it just like, I don't know, I would just sit down with a guitar and write these songs that were just like, I could write one of those songs in like an hour and be done with it without trying or thinking about it. It was like, it was already in me or something.
That's
it was
an
just
insane
happening.
Experience. Most writers would kill for that.
it was interesting. And like when I later went on to do the follow-up for Out of the Garden, I wasn't sure it felt too easy, if that makes sense. I was like, I don't know if I want to make a record that sounds like exactly like Out of the Garden again, or like the next necessarily like evolution of it, because it felt too easy and it felt like I lost the unconsciousness to it. I was like, by the time Out of the Garden was done and I had been touring with it, and I was like fully realized what I had created and what I was doing, it was no longer unconscious for me. And I was worried that if I did it again, it would be less genuine or something.
Interesting.
And I decided,
but I mean, so much happened between Out of the Garden and Nightstand too. I can't even imagine, like, I feel like if you compare the Nightstand writing process to the first the first album, it's like almost completely different, I would have to assume. But it's like good that you had the whole Out of the Garden writing experience where you just felt like the songs like needed to come out. That's just like again, everyone wishes like that was them when they're trying to like write songs and start bands and stuff.
And I think that's the takeaway, like from the response that I got to Out of the Garden and the way that people received it and how like warmly it was received. I mean, people would, and I feel this way about it too, that record just feels like a complete package. It feels like all of those songs belong together on that record. It just was like, I executed that record the best I could, and I think it just worked. And it's really hard to do that for a record. I think to this day, like Out of the Garden and Threads are the only two records I've been a part of that I think actually did that thing. It's so hard to be like, this is a concise, you know, like a pure, concise, like physical creation that is about a thing. Like, it's so hard because you can write two different songs that sound like they don't belong on the same record, you know. It happens to everyone. So to get it all together like that and then have like the art come together for it and to live the experience of that record, I think it's rare. I think I was able to do it with Out of the Garden, and I didn't want to try to force it and fail doing it again.
I mean, even just feeling like having a record like feel complete. Like, that is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you get all the mixes back, you get all the masters back, and you're like, it's done. And you're like, that's the feeling of completion. I feel like, even with people that I know whose records I love, they're like, yeah, man, but if I can go back and do that one thing different. But I mean, the fact that you can actually feel like you did two like completed records is, again, speaks volumes about like your work.
Well, and what's crazy about both of those records is they were almost, both of them, completely different. We had a whole different record written for Threads that 2 months before we were supposed to go into the studio, you know, we had already booked the studio time. We'd already been talking to the producer. We had the dates mapped out. Our travel plans were being booked. And like 2 months out, we were like, we don't like a lot of these songs anymore. They're not right. They're not what we want to do.
Right.
And so we like had to write our manager and be like, we're starting over. And he was like, what? And we were like, trust us. And so we went back to the drawing board, and in like literally a 2 month span before the record was recorded, we wrote like 8 new songs that ended up being on Threads. It would have been a record that sounded nothing like Threads.
And that's the same insane.
With Out of the Garden, the songs would have been exactly the same, but kind of the same thing. A little more funny, I guess, when we were in the studio recording Out of the Garden, we started laying down the tracks, and we had the first song kind of ready to start putting it together. And the producer like hit play on it, and it was this like really garagey, like lo-fi, trashy, grunge sounding thing. And I was like, oh, we must have had a miscommunication here. I was like, I want this to be clean. Like, I want this to be like bubblegum clean. And he was like,
what was the first song you wrote for the record? I'm curious now.
The first song was The Glow. I wrote it. My friend Andrew Futral, who plays in the band Field Mouse, him and I were going to start a side project, and we were going to call it Selma Blair. simply because I love Selma Blair, and her name rules.
That's sick. Okay.
Yeah. I tweeted out, is like, can any lawyers out there advise me if it's legal to call my band Selma Blair? And Selma Blair retweeted it.
That's
and
sick.
She didn't say anything. And I was like, does this mean, yes, I can do
this? This did not help me. I was being very serious, Selma. Please.
Yeah. And so I kind of had this little guitar part I liked that ended up being the beginning of The Glow, and I had sent a voice memo to Andrew. We didn't end up doing anything with Selma Blair, but I was like, I'm going to take this back and use it for Tancred. And that was kind of like the impetus. I was like, I'm going to write a whole record that sounds like this clip, which was The Glow. And so, yeah, in the studio, he like, I was like, this needs to be like sparkling. And he was like, all right. So he was like, I'm going to need a day to reorient myself. And so we had to take a day off from recording so the producer could go through. I think he had to quantize all the drums, which he was really bummed about. He did not, you know, I think this is understandable, you know, quantizing is kind of lame sometimes depending on what you're doing. But I was like, I want it to have dirty tones with quantized instruments. And so we did, and we came back the next day and he was like, how does this sound? And hit play on it. And I was like, this is perfect.
Gotcha.
Whole record, let's make it sound like this. And then we had Anna Warrenker from That Dog. Like, it was her husband, Steve, who was the producer, and she was co-producing with him, which was like a dream come true.
That must have been insane for you. You were probably just like, this is crazy.
Yeah, when I remember having the conversation with my manager being like, I want to write a record that falls in the same pocket as this like Letters to Cleo, That Dog world that is always really like hit something inside for me. And he was like, well, do you want to have That Dog produce it? And I was like, what? And he was like, I have a connection there. And I was like, oh my God. I was
like,
let's do it.
Yes, I do. Great.
Yeah. And Anna, I think, is most responsible on that record for the vocal treatments. She did a lot of the vocal editing. She recorded a lot of the harmonies on it with me for a few songs. And she worked a lot of magic with all of the vocal tracks on Out of the Garden, which is very That Dog too, because they have, you know, like 3 to 4
people
singing.
All those those 3-part harmonies are huge in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
How did it get chopped to polyvinyl? Like, so you finished the record, now you're on this whole other, you're working on Tancred specifically. What was like the industry side for you, and how were you feeling in that, like after it was done? Like you hit the complete and you're like, this is sick, this is the record I want. Time to shop it, or did you already have it kind of lined up?
So I had all of the demos done, and my manager shopped the demos, which I did in GarageBand. I would map out all of the songs in GarageBand with like fake drums that I would like type on my keyboard, like type the beats out.
Oh,
and
my God.
And I recorded That's all the awesome. Guitars and vocals into it, and I would send them to the two guys, the touring guys that played with Tancred, Kevin and Terrence, and they would track some real drums and bass over it and send it back, and we would just go back and forth like that until we had the complete demos. I mean, they sounded like, I didn't have like a mic, like I had no mics. This is like, I'm in my partner's studio right now. I'm like not tech friendly when it comes to music. So I was just recording like guitar parts, like into a like USB snowball mic. Mm-hmm. It sound like the demos sound super grungy. I should maybe release them. It might be kind of fun to do that, but
that'd
they're
be
like,
sick.
It's like the exact same songs, which is cool, but they're just like much scrappier. And
That's
we took,
sick.
Which
definitely
I guess
release those.
It might be why the producer thought I wanted to make a garage rock record, which was only because of the technical stuff on my end. But so we took those demos and started shopping them around. I remember we tried to go to Sub Pop with it and they were like, not for us. And then, at the same time it had been sent to Polyvinyl and they loved it. And, they were like, let's do this. So, that was my first time working with or speaking with Polyvinyl, like in any context whatsoever. And really great guys too. I got the same vibe from Polyvinyl as from Top Shelf, just like really wholesome people that really like all they care about is the music that they're being involved with. You know, they care about the spirit of the music and the artist, and that's, I think, like harder and harder to find.
No, for sure. On Polyvinyl, now Out of the Garden comes out, and then when did you do the tour with Foxing?
So that
was
like
after
that was the first Tancred tour.
Got it.
Let me just make sure this is still recording. I was supposed to keep an eye on that.
No, you're good. Because I remember specifically when I moved to college and I was like, oh, I'm living in New York City now. And then my friends were like, dude, we got to go see Fox. And I was like, sick. And then I saw your name. I was like, are you kidding? this is going to be the best show ever. And they're like, who? And I'm like, I got to sit you guys down. This is sick. And so it was honestly one of the best experiences I've had like in New York City. I was like, this is so small. But then even going to like your later record, it was wild because I was like a teenager and I'm listening to a song like Alston, which I'm like, yes, I relate to this. Alston, Mass. Yes. Perfect. And then I get to college and then you put out a song like Queen of New York and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, because she's like perfectly writing out my life as it's going, and I'm like, this is getting out of hand.
So you had moved from Boston area to New York?
So it literally just like, if you can listen to all of like the songs like in order, it's literally like the soundtrack to like me going through college, which again is super introspective and like total bullshit, but at the same time, it's still sick.
Yeah, it's the connector, you know, between like the listener and the music. That's like the most important thing.
I was going to ask about the Foxing tour was because if that was the first Tancred tour, then was that weird for you going out on your own? Because you were always with Now, what were you going through mentally? And you're like, holy shit, this is my band now. Fuck.
It was weird. It was definitely weird. It wasn't something that I felt ready for. And I still don't feel ready for it. I think I wanted Tancred to be a band when I was putting out of the Garden. I wanted to expand it. I had I probably went through like a short list of people I wanted to be in it with me. And some people didn't work out and some did. And ultimately Kevin and Terrence did. And that was, it ended up, at the end of the day, you know, like my team had to sit down with me and be like, you wrote these songs. It wasn't a band. Like, if you listen to the demos, you wrote these songs beginning to end. So like they're yours and this wasn't a band. And so I think we should market it as such. And I got really uncomfortable because up to that point, I'd only publicly toured as a band and I loved the vibe of a band. And so it was weird. And I eventually, you know, was like, okay, sure. And had to go back to the guys who had recorded on the record and be like, I'm going to pay you guys as session musicians. And that got really awkward at first. We worked through it and, you know, we're still very close and love each other to death. But that was a weird thing. I had to be like, this is me, I guess, going by Tancred. And I have to like take ownership for that. And at the same time, be a leader. And now we didn't need a leader because the three of us all brought our, you know, individual even not creatively, just even on tour, you know, like one of us would run merch. One of us would load in all of the gear. We had our roles to play. But with Tancred, suddenly it was like I had to be a leader and it sucked. I remember right before that Foxing tour, we got like a huge merch shipment of all of these new t-shirts we were going to have and vinyl. And we had to basically break open these boxes at my band's house, count in all the merch, and make sure it was all there. And we had this like huge fight because like I had a way I wanted to do it that I had always done it with Now, and the guys didn't want to do it that way. And you know, it had to be very like, all right, well, I paid for this merch,
it's a hard and awkward position to be in because it's just the weird roles that it just kind of had to be that way. But again, it's like super awkward to like say out loud.
And that's, I mean, it gets shitty, you know, like I never wanted to have to pull those cards with my friends and creative collaborators. Like I felt like a shithead doing it, but in kind of like taking ownership of Tancred and realizing it was just me, I relieved them of having to pay out of pocket for things. I had to pay for everything, you know, on my own credit cards. They didn't have to pay for anything. They were just there to get, you know, they were making money. I mean, arguable, you know, because you only make so much money on tour and you're probably losing out on a lot of money by not being at home.
For sure.
For rock bands anyway. But yeah, it was a weird balance where I had to be a leader and I had to make sure I was respecting them. And I don't know, it's still hard for me to really get my head out of like the way I like to do things. And I think it can be kind of abrasive. So I'm the same way with roommates too. I have like a really hard time living with people that I'm not in a relationship with. I just like really like to do shit my own way, and it it's easy. There's a lot of confrontations between me and bandmates and me and roommates.
Interesting.
And I always miss those days in Now when we were working together on everything. It was, 'cause
it just
so
felt
nice.
Like cohesive. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like having two other parts of my own brain there. And I think that's how the three of us felt. Mm-hmm. It was like if we had a question or an idea, we would say it in the other. We had two other people that we knew were in sync with us that could like help get to the right place. Right. And that never happens with myself and Tancred. I'm always wondering like, is this what I want to do? Is this good? Is anybody out there to help me?
I only need words of affirmation, honestly. Like even like with the bands that I've played in and like my band and stuff, all these things, they're like, I'm like, oh, do you want to hear this song? Like, come listen to this. And they're like, oh, it was good. And I'm like, what do you mean by good?
Yeah.
Can you help me out? And they're like, Morgan, it was great. Shut up. I was like,
yeah.
Oh my God. I constantly need that. And I live alone now because I'm the same way with roommates. So nice. It's sick.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I totally understand it.
And just being like, is this bad? Like, I just want somebody to tell me outright, is this bad? Right. Is this boring?
No, totally.
Or did I already write this song? Like, and nobody will ever tell you. You have to know. And that's the scariest part.
And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Especially like if you, like, well, so then on the, so your latest record, what was that like for you as well? Was it now you've toured by yourself. Everyone knows Tancred is Jess. How did that record come out? Because again, it's such a weird, it's not, again, it's, I don't want to say it's a departure because you still have these really great songs with these really good hooks, like Queen of New York totally flows with everything else. But then there's so many more deep emotional parts. And I think it really shines on the acoustic version that you also put out.
Yeah.
So what was that whole writing process with that?
So that one was like, I hit a point in my life where like I was feeling really happy with how everything was going with Out of the Garden. Mm-hmm. And I had moved back to Maine for a little bit into an apartment with some friends and was just like having a generally like, great time with life. And so I would just like, I set aside 3 days a week to start writing a new record. And that was the first time I'd been able to do that, like make like a huge writing space for myself. Mm-hmm. And had like a little songwriting nook in my bedroom, and I wrote like a few songs, like 3 or 4 songs I want to say, that do feel like follow-ups to Out of the Garden, like very like fun, like bright, energetic pop grunge songs. Mm-hmm. And then I started to feel like I was somehow doing a shtick of myself.
Mm.
I was like, these songs,
that's super interesting.
I like wrote them because I knew I could write songs like that and that I would like them and they would be doing what I wanted them to do. But that consciousness of it made me feel removed from them. I was like, I'm just like zipping up the Out of the Garden suit and writing songs, and that doesn't feel as pure to me as when I did it before. And then I was thinking like, I was going through a lot of kind of like self-awareness at that time. I was just getting older, you know, you hit your mm-hmm. like mid to late 20s and things start to change in your mind about, you know, what life really is. And I found that I had a lot of emotion going on internally, even though Out of the Garden was this like scrappy, fun, energetic, lively thing. When I got home from tour, I would be sitting in my bedroom feeling like that wasn't me anymore or something, or that wasn't all of me anymore. And so I wanted to write music that took some stuff from Out of the Garden, but was much more emotional. And I don't know. I think what ended up happening was I didn't end up with a record as cohesive as Out of the Garden. You know, I can own up to that. I like clearly see that and think that that's very true, that I had a hard time with Nightstand. It all of the songs felt very disjointed, and I spent a lot of time. I probably spent a year total working on writing songs for that record and trying to figure out like which songs should make the cut and which shouldn't, and how can I make them fit together when some of them clearly don't. And yeah, I don't know. I think I was trying to combine two things that didn't go together almost. It was like, you know, when you're a kid and you do that little like science experiment with like a water bottle where you put half oil and half water with food coloring mm-hmm. and like see how they don't mix. That's kind of how that record feels to me. I mean, I love all of the songs on Nightstand, but do I think it sounds like
I love that record, man. I love that record, dude. Again, that's just as a fan and as a person who appreciates it.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I think what like I'm totally makes sense now that you're saying that. I kind of want to look out for it because I want to like I'll re-listen to it in the same way that you're saying it, because it's interesting. All of those moments that would at least to me feel disjointed in any way. Again, with the acoustic version, it really like is this deep, prolific experience of like feeling like how you don't really know how to feel.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how I've always said it. But man, again, I love that record and I still think it's sick.
Yeah. And I mean, I appreciate that record because I think it was honest of my experience. I was very confused, like you said. I didn't know what kind of record I wanted to make and I didn't know what kind of person I was. So that's what the record is. It's like a piece of truth of what was going on in my world.
And again, it's now I've hit 24 mm-hmm. and I'm feeling that way. So again, thank you for just soundtracking my emotions for years. I really appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Well, now there's this pressure for when I write something else.
Oh,
like,
no,
yeah,
I know.
Where
yeah,
do you
no,
live? You, let's start
you'll be
there.
Like, you'll be like, all right, Morgan, where are you moving? Are you thinking about going to L.A.? We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, where do you live now? Are you still?
Yeah, I'm in New York. I'm in New York City still.
Cool. Okay.
So I just graduated. So now I'm just kind of doing the New York thing. But I've been here for 6 years and I'm like, I'm thinking about L.A., thinking about it. Big road trip coming up. We'll see what happens. Yeah. If you could write something super existential, that'd be sick. Yeah, what are you working on now?
I just lived in L.A. for 2 years, so, I could end up writing a song
hey,
about that.
Hey, again, please. It would fit perfectly. But, again, I am only one person, and I'm just one person who really likes your music, and that is what I will say on that matter. You do not have to coordinate anything for me specifically.
Well, I think it might just work out. It seems like neither of us tried, and it just keeps happening. So
exactly. No, it's totally, totally cool, but I don't want to take up any more of your time. I really appreciate you coming on. Again, I'm a huge fan. Anything that you're going to be putting out is absolutely sick. And I just want to say truly thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And the one thing I can say about what I'm working on now is that it's going very slowly. I think I've written 2 songs in the last 3 years, but I've got a bunch of song starts. And now it's just a matter of seeing kind of The thing I'm trying to let happen now is what takes me over, Out of the Garden did. And I think it changes by the day. So it's been very hard to know. But that'll keep you on your toes.
Please.
Nobody on earth knows what the next Tankard record will sound like, especially myself.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm sure that me and all your other fans are just awaiting. And it will be we'll calibrate it as the next Frank Ocean record for alternative music. Because it'll be this long awaited. There'll be rumors of it. They'll be like, oh my God, has anyone heard from Jazz? What's the record going to be like?
Oh my God, Frank Ocean. So, wow. Well.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Again, I really appreciate you being on here. You're absolutely the best. And have a really good day, man.
You as well. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.